Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Well, hey there, folks out in podcast land, listening to your podcast. This is Life is Short. Before we begin, I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Bud Light Seltzer. We love these drinks so much, we can't stop talking about them. So finally, they just thought, okay, we'll be a sponsor. Fine. Here's the show.
In the summer of 2000, 20 years ago, I was doing my first big lead role in a movie called, it was called Jeepers Creepers. And the producer of that movie was one of my cinematic heroes, Francis Ford Coppola. And he took everyone out for a big fancy dinner. All I wanted to know about was shooting Apocalypse Now or The Outsiders or any of his other movies. I so badly wanted to hear stories about these movies that I loved. I said something like, Oh, what about Martin Sheen in Apocalypse Now? What happened when he punched the mirror? And Coppola told me the story about it, which was Coppola had a dream where Martin Sheen was a bunch of Russian nesting dolls, and he was nothing but a face. And Martin Sheen was really drunk in this hotel room, and Coppola told him about the dream. And so when Martin Sheen punched the mirror, he was really punching his own face, and he got sliced up his hand, had to be taken to the hospital, and had a heart attack, it turns out, later. And I was just in awe and hearing him tell it. And then there was just like the silence. And I realized we're at this table and there are families and there are kids there, you know, and he told this like gruesome, crazy story about filmmaking. Also, we're all about to go make this movie.
Did you ever work with Coppola again?
No, surprisingly, no. Wait, why do you mention
that? I'm just curious.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
Shaboom. You are listening to Life is Short. I am your host, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Shaboom.
20-year-old Justin Long, like a little yappy puppy. Like a little eager puppy dog with oversized paws.
Ugh.
Just desperate for stories from Coppola.
Yeah.
I can see it. I wasn't there, but I can see it.
Even if you were now, 20 years later, if you were on the podcast, I'd be so annoying with him. I was annoying today with our guest, who we're going to mention. And our guest today, the reason we're talking about Coppola, was in one of Coppola's most iconic movies, The Outsiders.
A movie that I have not seen.
Yeah, you got to fix that. We should watch it tonight.
Okay.
And aren't you curious to see it?
I said that proudly, but I'm not proud. I'm ashamed because I know it's great.
It's great. And you've read the book. You know the story.
I have not read the book.
Ooh. Okay, well.
Now, should I feel shame?
Maybe a little.
Okay.
But our guest today was in that movie, and you may be a titter now. You may be so teased because
it's not C. Thomas Howell.
No, what a great cast though. I mean, it could be any number of
who else is
legends.
That? Matt Dillon.
A lot of legends in that movie.
Who else is in that movie?
Tom Cruise, Emilio Estevez, Ralph Macchio.
Oh yeah,
Diane Lane. Oof, man.
How do you feel about Diane Lane?
I think she's an incredible
actress.
You like
her personality?
Yeah, I think she's a great actress. Uh-huh. Why?
I don't know. You just got really flushed when you said her name.
Well, also, I discovered that movie during a time in my life, formative time, when I was the age of those
kids.
Where
you were discovering yourself.
Yeah. Okay. We don't have to get into
it.
Slippery slope. Okay. She's in the movie, and she's great in it, and it's just an incredible cast. That's where my love affair with Matt Dillon began. What?
Oh, you mean as an actor?
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I would have told you if I had an actual love affair.
If you had a crazy affair with Matt Dillon and you didn't tell me
about
it.
What if this is how I'm revealing that? And you know me for this long? Wouldn't
scary.
You be scared?
Oh, I would leave here right now, get in the car, drive away. I would need to be by myself for a couple weeks.
If
you earnestly told me right now that you had a crazy, like, 2-year-long affair with Matt Dillon. And
well,
you were just telling me now, I would like,
yeah, that'd be weird.
I would question a lot about my existence.
Yeah, well, I it would be very hard. I would all have to have been because I was embarrassed to tell you, or Matt said he would hurt me if I told him.
Or you signed
NDA. God. For the record, I have not yet had an affair with Matt Dillon. We're both still alive. So
possible.
I would say it'd probably be less probable on his end to want to engage in that.
You're more likely to want to have an affair with them than vice versa, yeah, you think?
I think so.
It's so weird to think
about. It's weird to think about. I mean, I as an actor, I really fell in love with Matt. And then years later, I got to work with him, and that was a thrill. But also a thrill to talk to our guest today, who was not Matt Dillon. Hopefully one day will be Matt Dillon. Our guest today is Rob Lowe, the really horrible to look at. the very attractive. I mean, I hate even mentioning that because
you
talk
don't
want
to reduce him to that. But let's
talk about that.
Let's just get it out of the way. Let's talk about it now.
Yeah, the gorgeous elephant in the room.
Yeah. I mean, one of, I would say, the all-time best-looking male faces on the planet.
Oh, wow.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, yeah, certainly.
It's really tough to compete with Rob Lowe.
Yeah, I mean, and continues to...
And this is from someone who really admires Tom Brady's face. But I would say Rob Lowe is next level. He's also really funny, and you guys talk about that, I know. So maybe we could talk about that afterwards.
Okay, great.
But, you know, people know Rob Lowe. Everyone knows Rob Lowe. He has a new podcast called...
Literally. Oh, you have to say it like that.
Yeah, that's how he says it.
And, okay, we talk about that. I didn't realize that because I am, well, we'll save it. So he'll talk about the podcast. It's funny to talk about a podcast on another podcast, but we've done it before, and I'm sure it'll happen again. And, of course, this incredible body of work dating back
to... I thought you were just going to say incredible body because we had just finished talking about his face. We should also mention his incredible body
of work. yeah, and his face that also not to dwell on his face any longer, but is changing so well. You know, is aging in a really like nice way, and he's not getting all that work that a lot of guys end up getting work done on their face. Anyway, admire him for that, and so many more things that we will get into right now. My first encounter.
Oh, yeah, you had never met him.
Never met him, so it was really cool to get to talk to him.
Also, just as a little heads up, the first, I would say, 9 or 10 minutes of the interview, the audio on his end, for some reason, is pretty bad. It's pretty shitty. But then he plugs something in or flicks a button or something, and it's a million times better. So
maybe he just set his gaze on the right part of the computer.
Maybe.
And it just turned on.
So just as a little warning, if you're annoyed by the first 10 minutes of the sound quality, stick it out and it turns around at minute 10.
And I hope you guys enjoy it. Here's my talk with Rob Lowe.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do-do-do-do-shaboo.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, this ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up and we'll meet again.
What do you say?
Rolo.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that.
Yes. I love that you know what it is. Oh, it's on the screen, too.
Right, it's on the screen, but I'm J-Lo. So that's kind of a fun one, too.
That is a good one.
Look at you. Hey, Rob, I have the worst memory in the world. Do you recall us meeting ever?
I'm the same, okay. By the way. I don't think we have.
You're somebody that I've admired for such a long time that it would be incumbent on me to remember because it'd be more likely that I would remember because I grew up watching you and admiring you, but I don't think that we have. It's nice to meet you. Why are you doing a podcast?
I believe in running my career backwards.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I started out as a big movie star, and then I decided, you know what? I'm just going to go to television. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to become an author. And then I was, you know what? I'm going to go out on the road with my stand up and bang around. And now it's like, I'm doing a podcast. I'm de-evolving with my career.
What's next? And where do you go from there?
I think it's lemonade stand.
But a very entertaining, a gorgeous lemonade stand.
It will be unlike anything you've witnessed. The podcast actually comes from the same place of like when I was like, I think I've got a memoir or two in me, but I didn't really know.
Yeah.
But I knew it would be fun. And if it didn't work, it would be fun. And if it worked, it'd be great.
Exactly.
Well, I did two of them and they both worked. Then it was like, I think I have a one-man show. Uh-huh. And same. I don't know if it'll work, but I'll have fun doing it. And if it works, it's a whole other thing for me. I've been played all over the world, National Theater, London.
Oh,
you know, 2,500 seat. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I do like 2,500 seat theaters.
Oh, wow. What is that experience like? Rob, is that based on your memoirs then? Is that just your, is it your life?
It's in lieu of a third memoir. Oh. So like people are like, are you going to do a third book? So I wrote a show and it's very similar to the books, but it's observations and it's literally storytelling.
Oh, that's cool.
It's me telling stories for an hour and a half. And there's some clips, but they're more for joke punctuation as opposed to, now here's St. Elmo's Fire. It's not bad.
Yeah. Are you going to be starting that back up when?
I am. Whenever we can get the concert business back going, I will do that. I've got a couple big Atlantic City things coming up. And,
oh, wow.
But so the podcast was the same. It was like, I think I have a podcast in me because I've been blessed to know a lot of really diverse, interesting people over the 40 years I've been doing this. I have a history with everybody.
Sure. Yeah.
From the most random to the most famous to the most, and let's face it, no one's going to talk to Gwyneth Paltrow like the guy who gave her room and board when she was 16 and being out in LA trying to find an agent. You know what I mean?
Literally.
Literally.
Yeah. So that's the name of the show.
Yep.
You've always struck me as somebody who, whenever I see you on talk shows and whatnot, you seem like you're very curious and you enjoy talking to people. So it makes sense. When I heard that you were doing it, it wasn't like, Rob Lowe, really? You seem like you were a good fit for that. So you've just been calling friends and being like, hey, you want to come on the show?
It's been friends so far, but it's also been people that I didn't know, which has been really fun. Like, and it's like us, you know, we don't know each other and we're in it, but we instantly have a thing going on. So I love that. But I got to say, out of the gate, it's just fun to talk to Alec Baldwin.
Oh.
Or my Magic Johnson going to be my second guest, and I'm like, he and I are doing a deep dive of what we saw together as friends during the '80s, LA Lakers, Showtime era. I mean, no one's going to talk to Magic like I am.
Right. Well, can you? I mean, you can't really go that deep when it comes to stuff like that, right? I mean, I imagine a lot of the stuff that you saw in the '80s with the Brat Pack. That there's got to be a finite depth that you can mine.
You remember. I mean, it's like for every great story I remember, there are 10 that I've forgotten.
I bet. I remember seeing you with Kevin Bacon and I think Michael J. Fox. There's an amazing set of. Have you seen these photos? They were circulating on the internet.
The one you're talking about is Judd Nelson, Michael J. Fox, and me in the back of a bus.
That's what it is. Yeah. Yeah. How did I throw Kevin Bacon?
I remember it.
You do remember that?
Oh, I remember the three of us are the three most hungover human beings in the history of the planet. And we're on the back of what was called the Hollywood Clean Water Caravan.
Yes.
Organized by Jane Fonda and Tom Hayden. It was the first proposition on the California proposition ballots ever passed.
Oh, wow.
Now, of course, all they do is do proposition ballots.
Yeah.
And it was to label toxins that would be in the drinking water.
Oh.
And, you know, no one knows more about toxins and drinking.
Yeah, than three hungover actors.
Yes, exactly.
God, I remember those days where you could be hungover and not really feel it. It was like, you're a little run down. Now I get a hangover, and it's like I'm out for at least 2 days.
No, for sure. Yeah. Those days, it was like, you know, it was like the way I feel before I get my first cup of coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Your dad was a trial attorney. Do you think he had anything to do with your ability to speak and to engage in conversation?
Yeah, he was a trial attorney, as you would say. He was a wordsmith.
And your mom was a teacher. Yeah.
My mom was an English teacher, and one of the, you know, wrote every day of her life, never bothered to get around to figuring out what to do with it.
Huh.
She wrote because she needed to, had to, enjoyed it.
Wow.
Like
journal, so, wrote about her life, wrote about, yeah.
Journal, every day of her life, dream journal, short stories, screenplays. And never did anything with it, which was always a great source of frustration to me because I'm very
proactive,
result-oriented. Yeah, proactive and result-oriented. But when she passed away, I inherited all of her writings, and the woman journaled every day of her life.
Oh my God!
From probably 1968 to when she died in 2009.
Wow, Rob, what an incredible resource to have of somebody you were so close with. I'm sure you've gone back and read.
Yeah, like my brother and I are like, do you remember that weird road trip we took? I'm like, hang on one second.
Oh my God.
Yep, it was a weird road trip.
Oh my God.
Oh, she was very upset with us. Oh, you were a very bad boy that day.
Whatever. Oh my God, that's so cool. And also potentially, I would imagine, scary to unearth some of this stuff.
It's definitely the definition of Pandora's box.
Yeah.
You're not sure you want to open that thing up.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially some of the dream journals. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder what my mother's dreams were. Right.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, I get visuals very easily, too. I get, like, instant visuals and... I'm now imagining some of my own mother's erotic dreams. I'm sure you're in a lot of them. What is that like, Rob? I've always also wondered this, to be, you're somebody who is so often as talented and smart and all of these cerebral things that you are, you're often objectified. You're one of the guys that it's like safe to say, oh, Rob Lowe's so attractive or doesn't age or these things. And I'm looking at you now and that's true. But what? Help me as a person who is not in that position understand what that's like to, I don't want to say deal with it like it's an affliction, but to spend a life with your face.
Well, there's two sides of it, really. Mm-hmm. One is just even the conversation of it makes me roll my eyes and go, you know, it's my fucking face.
Of course.
Right? It is what it is. I don't know anything different. I mean,
there's no real way to answer that to, I'm sorry to even ask, without sounding somewhat douchey. Like, well, just to accept the question is like, you're accepting that is a truth. But let's say it is, for argument's sake.
What my takeaway midlife of all of this is objectification. I love that you use that word, because that really is what it is.
Sure.
And usually the shoe's on the other foot. It's usually guys objectifying women, right? And I don't know how many guys get objectified, walk down the street. It's like, I've been the person who's walked down the street and had the construction workers whistling at me.
Yes. Totally. It's like,
right?
It's like you, Tom Brady, I could think of maybe a handful that applies to.
Right? I mean, and it's a thing of like, you go, it's flattering right up into the middle.
It's not flattering. And when I was a kid, you could still hear me, right?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I can hear you better now for some reason. You just really came in.
When I was a teen idol, I was always unsettled by it, and I could never really figure out why it was so unsettling. And it wasn't until years of therapy and getting sober and doing all the work on myself that I've done over the past 30 years that I realized it was the objectification.
Yeah.
You realize... like, it has nothing to do with you.
You lose your agency or something?
You just happen to be the guy who is occupying a place in the zeitgeist at that moment for every hormonal teenage girl.
Uh-huh.
When they outgrow you or you outgrow it, there'll be somebody else.
Right.
bear belt that's been going on since Donovan and Elvis and Bieber and Leo, and it's going to go on and on and on, and you just happen to have a spot on the conveyor belt, and half the time they don't even know why they like you.
Yeah. How quickly did that happen, Rob, after The Outsiders? That, because that was your first film, right, when you played?
Yeah, and it actually happened even before that, because I did a network TV series when I was 15. Uh-huh. And there were like three networks then.
Yeah.
And we were the lowest rated show on all of television.
Right, right.
Top 60 minutes. Uh-huh. We had horrible ratings, and I looked back at the ratings, and I think we had 15 million people.
Wow.
And it was a disaster.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was just, even back in the early 2000s, I was just talking to Julie Bowen. We were on a show together called Ed that nobody really saw. I got like middling, you know, and I brought that up, and she said, oh, compared to today's numbers, that'd be a hit. It was like 8 million, you know, like you said, there just weren't choices. There just weren't other things to choose. So 50 million people are watching that. That's enough to change your life. That's enough to change your experience walking down the street.
Well, I remember we used to shoot in front of a live audience. And, you know, as you know, you shoot shows and you bank a bunch of them and then they start airing. So the first show we shot after we aired one episode, they introduced me, and the place went so crazy that they instituted a rule that nobody under the age of 20 would be allowed into the audience again.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
And what you do is I go like, I'm still the same guy. Nothing changed.
Yeah.
I'm still the same guy who went to Santa Monica High School. And look, it's not like I didn't have girlfriends. I did. But, you know, I wasn't in the cool group. All the girls loved the athletes and the volleyball players. And I was a theater nerd.
You may have seen yourself that way, but do you ever look back, or do you have friends who look back and say, no, what are you talking about? You were handsome and cool. You were like, girls wanted you. And
I'm telling, no, they really don't.
Really?
My friend, that it was a different time. First of all, not everybody was an actor. Business was still such that it hadn't pivoted 100% to being a total glorification of youth. So there were child actors. Now every child is an actor.
Right. That's true. That's true. TikTok. And was your brother doing it at the same time? Were you guys kind of coming up together, Chad?
We're really close. Still are.
Yeah.
He's 4 years younger than me. So he wasn't doing any acting or anything like that. He and Charlie Sheen, they were best friends. And they were going to be professional baseball players.
Oh my god, that's funny. Does he still play? Do you ever play with him on a softball league?
I've played with both. Are really good. Charlie was really good.
I mean, really,
Charlie probably throw in the '90s.
Oh my god,
he was really good.
Wow. So sorry to jump around so much, Rob. But did that TV show lead to Coppola seeing you for The Outsiders?
Well, I only learned this later in life. That what happened was Coppola asked for all of the teenage pinups to be put on a montage board so he could look at them.
To be literally pinned up.
Literally pinned up.
Yeah.
So me being on that show turned me into a teen idol, which put me
in
teen magazines, which put me on the magazine where his casting director went, and here's this one and that. So, you know, it would have been me and Willie Ames.
Yeah.
Scott Baio and Leif Garrett and Matt Dillon. And that was part of
the
process for The Outsiders. And then, of course, you had to go in and audition and read and do all that stuff.
So it was just you and I imagine a room full of like who's who in early 80s Hollywood, just in a room kind of duking it out like a mix and match type of thing.
It was a total mix and match. And it was everybody from Dennis Quaid.
Oh, wow.
And Mickey Rourke, they were on the older end. And Mickey, when Mickey was Mickey was the next great white hope.
Yeah, yeah.
He was Brandon. All the way down to like the kid who starred in E.T.
Oh, yeah. Henry Thomas. Wow. Wow. I mean, that's when I fell in love with movies. So this is, just talking to you about this is a thrill. I'm going to try to prevent myself from nerding out too much. but you must have been, were you, What was your confidence level like? I'd imagine for a 15, 16-year-old kid to be in a room with Coppola, who at the time, I think he was coming off of Apocalypse Now, and you know, it didn't get any bigger than that. What did that feel like, being in that room? Not to mention being in a room with Matt Dillon and these guys that you probably knew.
Yeah, it was, well, the stakes were really, really high. Really intimidated by Francis. Huh. And everybody wanted it so badly. And, you know, we were all friends by that point, me, Cruz, Emilio, some of the others. And we would go in for days and audition. Days.
Wow, really? Days. Wow.
And mix
just
and match.
Just reading the script, you would just exchange parts. I've just seen some of the, I was just watching Hearts of Darkness. Well, that's why I always wondered about Coppola post Apocalypse Now, if like he was more maybe relaxed and just had this ease with his directing style. No.
See, I thought all movies were made the way Francis made movies.
Right.
Because I didn't know any better. And, you know, he would, when we finally got the part, I remember he would make us go play tackle football in the street because he wanted to toughen us up.
Oh, my God.
And I remember Tommy Howell, God bless him, whose dad was a stuntman. And Tommy was, although he was the youngest, he in many ways was the most experienced because he'd grown up on sets.
Yeah.
And Tommy huddled us all up and said, fuck this. I'm quitting. I'm not doing this. And if Francis fires me over it, so be it. Because what'll happen is I'll break my leg.
Yeah.
He'll get fired.
Wow.
So, you know, Francis had, he was fascinating, had amazing ideas, and did things that no other director would have thought of, tried to do, and on. And it was bedlam.
Were you guys improvising any of that, or was it all pretty heavily scripted?
We improvised the entire movie, and Francis was the first person ever to use video or video assist or a monitor.
Oh my God.
The first person.
Wow. On that movie?
He used it on that movie.
Wow.
Video assist the entire and the whole thing on a monitor. And that's when directors were still sitting right by the lens.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
And we shot the entire movie on a green screen at least twice before we ever shot it for real.
What?
And I only learned later that was because there was a hiccup in the financing and he didn't want to release the cast. I just thought that Francis wanted to do a month of rehearsals. I didn't really.
Oh my God.
It's all this crazy. Cause you know, the bank was foreclosing on him because of One from the Heart.
Right. That musical that he did, right. That like was just way over. Oh, that's right. He did Outsiders after. God. See, I always imagined he did Outsiders because he lost his shirt on One from the Heart. And so he needed something more commercial.
100%. There was a notion that, you know, this was Francis's idea of what a commercial movie would be.
Yeah.
So there was a little bit of calculation in it in that way. But then, you know, he's an artist, so he brought that level to it. And he would always tell you he was trying to make Gone with the Wind, ironically. Isn't that hilarious? That's what he wanted to make in the movie.
Oh, wow.
He wanted to make Gone with the Wind for teens. If you look at the Stay Gold sequence, it literally is the same image from With God as My Witness, I Shall Never Go Hungry.
Oh, in the background. I've been meaning to rewatch that. I've been watching in quarantine. I've been watching all these old, revisiting my favorites, and that's one I'd like to go back and see. And then Rumblefish, I was really into as well. Similarly, Green.
That ironically, because they shot them back to back.
Oh wow!
And Rumblefish was the one everybody. That was the cool one to be in.
Oh.
Now, Snyder's was sort of considered the bubblegum teeny bop.
Ah.
But even though that book was way, way more of a
bigger hit. Book
than Rumble, but Rumblefish was definitely considered the cool one to be in.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doot, 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 shaboom.
As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, mm-hmm. and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person certain cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over. Because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up, we'll meet again.
When you're working that intimately with those, with that kind of a cast, you must have forged lifelong friendships. I mean, you must still be friends with those guys.
I was 17 years old. It was the first time I'd ever left my own home, been away from my family.
Wow.
I turned 18 on the set, and it's the equivalent of if you had frat brothers and lived in, and were in a fraternity.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Regardless of, I see them, I don't see them, I haven't seen them in years. When I run into any of them, we're frat brothers, and we have that. That connection that nobody can take away, and we immediately are bonded right back to where we were when we were 17, 18, and 19.
You just start tackling each other in the street.
Then we would have boxing matches in the hallway of the, I don't know what we must have been out of our, what we were, listen, 17, 18, 19.
Yeah. I would expect, it'd be weird if you guys were all like, no, we were very, you know, responsible. We woke, yeah. Oh my God. That was in Tulsa. Where'd they shoot that in Oklahoma?
Tulsa. All in Tulsa.
Wow. Wow. With Aaron Sorkin's West Wing. How did that happen? And was that something that you were resistant to doing TV?
It was an era. It's almost hard to imagine now.
Yeah, I know.
TV has supplanted movies now.
Yeah.
There was a moment in time where being on television was like considered a second-rate, hacky media.
Yeah.
That was the culture of right up to the beginning of The West Wing. It was very much stigmatized.
That's true. It was, in fact, I would say that that's one of the shows that started to turn that stigma. Well,
it for sure was, because I can tell you that from Kiefer Sutherland in 24, to William Peterson and CSI, all those guys took me aside and said, watching what you did on West Wing made me want to do this.
Wow.
But when I read the script, there was no doubt. I mean, when I read the script, it was like, I don't care if this is on TV, movies, backyard theater. This script is so good. I can't wait to be a part of this.
And had you seen any of Aaron's work before? Had you seen A Few Good Men?
I auditioned for Malice, which is a movie he wrote, which people forget about. Which
Alec Baldwin, right?
Yeah, Alec Baldwin got the part.
Did you guys talk about that?
Alec did my podcast.
I knew you were up for it. I had heard you were up for it. I was very nervous.
Let me, right, Rob. just on a total sidebar, my wife was the leading makeup artist of her time for men, and she was Alec's makeup artist on Glengarry Glen Ross.
Oh, you know, Alec mentioned her on the show. Yeah. Yeah. Why? There was on Glengarry. Yeah, he was.
And I went to visit her, and the 2 days that I happened to be there were the only 2 days that Alec was on the movie. And I watched Alec shoot what I think is one of the greatest performances in the history of acting. And that's his always be closing speech.
You know what it takes to sell real estate? Wow. That's cool. What was that like? I've got to see I love outtakes more than anything. And to see those outtakes, what a thrill that would be.
Oh, I can tell you what it was like. Those guys were not having it.
Really?
Fuck no.
Like, who's this fucking, who's a handsome, like, young guy coming in and shitting on us?
Exactly. 100% wow. they were not acting.
Wow.
And then Alec told me this story, which is so funny. Not Jack Lemmon.
Ed Harris, Alan Arkin.
Arkin, because he does a good Arkin impression.
Yeah, he does a good. He said there was a moment during the day he'd said to Alan, you know, it's going to be rough. I'm going to yell at you, and I think you're great, whatever. And then Alan was in his dressing room, I think, talking on the phone and being loud. And Alec was trying to talk to him, and he knocked on his door and said, "Mr. Arkin, I'm so sorry. I'm just on the phone. Do you mind?" And Arkin goes, "Out there, in here, yes, yes. My God."
Yeah.
Out there, in here, yeah. My God.
The version he told me was that he said that as a result of Alec asking in the makeup chair. I think they were talking about, like, hey, how do you think that movie did? Or, like, they were talking about box office shit. Or, like, you know, some kind of chit-chat about the industry. And that's what prompted him to say, out there.
Was he doing the same?
Yeah, he's telling the same stories on different podcasts.
Well, listen, when you have great hits, play the hits.
Oh, I have like 10. I circulate. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
And whenever you can do an impression like that, even if the story's not great, which this one is.
It's all an excuse.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Well, that must be another thing about, now I'm dwelling on this like teen idol stuff and moving out of that and transitioning and being reduced to something, because in addition to being smart, you're also very funny. And I remember, like, when Parks and Rec started, people were, the vibe was always like, oh, Rob Lowe, or even like Tommy Boy, like, oh, Rob Lowe gets the joke. Rob Lowe's really funny. I remember seeing Ryan Phillippe and MacGruber and being like shocked that he got the joke. Somebody so attractive. When did that start? When did that perception, as far as you can tell, start changing for you?
It was for sure. When Lorne Michaels took me under his wing, for sure. First time I hosted SNL, which was a dream. And, you know, what SNL meant to me as a kid growing up, comedy, all of it is impossible to overstate. And then to be able to host it. And then for Lorne, out of all the hosts that come and go, to sort of pluck me and put me in that tight world of Mike Myers and Dana and, you know, and Farley.
That's right, because you did a bunch of, I mean, you were in Wayne's, right? You would always be like popping up in those really funny movies. So that was all Lorne
It was all Lorne and a little Mike Myers we hit it off the first time we met. When you host, you know, you go into the writer's rooms and you meet with each writer and you pitch ideas, and the host can be either as involved or not involved as they want. And I always loved being involved. And I remember meeting Mike the very first time I hosted, and he said to me, "Do you want to do a Wayne's World or do you want to do a Sprockets?"
Oh, that's so fucking cool. I mean, either way, that's so cool.
And we did a Sprockets
because I was a huge
Sprockets fan.
Me too, yeah.
And then later on, I did Wayne's World the movie.
Ah, that is so fucking cool. What? Oh man, was it hard? I'm gonna be like Chris Farley in the Chris Farley Show.
Yeah, I was talking about the Chris Farley Show just the other day. When Chris Farley in the Chris Farley Show had Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney. Oh God. What does he say to him when he's like? Yeah, when you play a song backwards, it says you're dead. Paul is dead. Is that true? Yeah. But what makes something like that great is like the perfect balance to a character like that is, which people don't give credit to, is Paul McCartney being, oh, yes, Chris, I think actually, you know, I do think in the end, the love you take is equal to the... being totally straight. And that is something that you were doing so well in Tommy Boy, Wayne's World, these Saturday Night Live era movies, like the golden era of Saturday Night Live. So I, as an actor, I see that and I know that you get it. I know that. But did people continue to be surprised by your, say things like, whoa, he's funny, and
it is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
No one has made more hay out of low expectations than me.
That's funny. That's funny.
To this day, people are like, I didn't know you were so funny. And I'm glad. I'm honestly, whether it's the books, the show, whatever, like, people just don't expect much from me. So it's perfect. Right.
You lower the expectations. And even if you're just mediocre, people are thrilled.
You win. Let's face it. I'm not that good. They just think I'm going to be worse.
Because you are funny, was it difficult then on West Wing, I imagine? I mean, probably the opposite of the Coppola experience in terms of improv, and it's not like Parks and Rec. It must have been so rigid, right? I've heard those stories about him.
Which is a whole other discipline, and I love the fact that I can swim in both pools of the Sorkin world, where it's about executing a beautiful symphony,
mm-hmm.
and a difficult symphony, and you have to trust your instrument and know when it's your part, and know when to be under, know when to be over, but knock it out of the fucking park every single time. Or on Parks and Rec, where it's jazz, and you're kind of not that we made it up, because Mike Schur wrote everything, and 99.9% of everything that was ever in Parks was Mike Schur and that amazing writer.
Oh, really?
It was insane. Yeah, I mean, we would do what we called fun run improv at the end, and stuff would famously make it into the show. But I think people would be shocked at how much of Parks and Rec was the amazing.
Right? Wow. That is surprising. I mean, it's a testament to the acting too, because it felt so kind of off the cuff, organic in those testimonials. Always felt so like improv-y.
Yeah. No, we would do them, and sometimes they would, and it felt improv-y, and it was very loose, even though it was really loose. It was not Sorkin, where I remember one day we were doing one of those 11-page walk and talks with characters folding in and then folding out the camera and then going down a spiral staircase and then through a kitchen and then to a loading dock and a limousine going away. And somebody had the line, it was written HMMM, comma, I think so.
Uh-huh.
It said, "Ah, I think so," and Aaron's like, "Nope, we're going again."
Oh, this Steadicam guy's like, "Are you fucking kidding?" Oh God, wow! And I always imagine to be—I've never done a Sorkin thing—but to be in one of those shots, like you said, an 11-page walk and talk with the Steadicam, to have like a small part, it's small like a line in that must be the worst.
No, you don't want to have the small part. You want to have the. Because then if you fuck up, it's fine. What you don't want to be, and I remember this vividly, sometimes we'd be on the set. And the one thing that always made me laugh about the West Wing is oftentimes we'll walk past the same door twice only to open that fucking door.
Because you'd run out of real estate?
So you do the hallway twice and then walk into the office. Walking into the Oval Office.
That's funny.
So you'd be sitting there and you'd hear them coming. And then you hear them coming again, and the door would open and you'd go, "Yes, Mr. President," and like it, and you just the heart of not wanting to fuck up take that's already been going on for 5 minutes.
Oh yeah. And actors, it's sort of like, I guess it's akin to, I remember the first time I went surfing, my friend was like, in Malibu, he's like, he's a really good surfer. He's like, just come. I was like, I think I should stay in the baby waves. He's like, just come out. You trial by fire. You got to just like get yourself out there. So I did. And a bunch of these surfers that I've been talking to beforehand, we had been going there with, were so cool and chill. And I got perpendicular to two of their surfboards and I fucked up both of their waves. And I thought they were going to drown me. I thought they were going to murder me. I'm not even exaggerating. They were livid. And I think actors can, to a certain extent, get like that. If you fuck up an actor, especially like thinking of some of the people on that show, mm-hmm. I'm sure there were, I worked with Richard Schiff. I'm sure there was, and I love Richard.
I love it. You went right. You know, it would be Richard.
Richard. And I,
What's the word? Richard's tough.
And I'd say it to his face. I'd tell him, yes, yeah. I'd flinch as I was saying it, but I'd, yeah, it's just, I remember one the thing I did with Richard, the director, who was really great director, great guy, was like, okay, and we were pressed for time. It was a low budget thing. And he was like, okay, Richard, you're going to come over here and say the line. And he said, and Richard goes, why? And he said, well, you're just, because the character's here and you gotta come here. And he said, why? And everybody got really tense. And in Richard's defense, he needed a reason. It could have been and I think they ended up making it as simple as, well, you're bringing a plate over there, something simple. But it was like, he needed it. And he was, and I remember the director was kind of a younger guy, and he was like, he started really panicking. It can be tough. Yeah. But hell of an actor.
You know, the other thing is, as you also know, having done TV, that schedule eats you alive. Mm. And I always like to say, if you have a performance that you like on television, by television, I don't mean streaming. That's mm-hmm. that's movies now. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about network television. Mm-hmm. There's a performance you even remotely like, that person's a fucking acting genius.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because yeah. it is such a buzzsaw.
Yeah.
All of the things that we do as actors to properly deliver a performance are... that it's not a culture that supports it. So when Richard Schiff asks why, which is absolutely what he should do.
Totally. Yeah.
The fact that we were able to take the time and answer those questions on the West Wing, and that was the culture.
That's crazy.
Was really, really extraordinary because yes, we were there to serve Aaron, but the culture of acting was taken deadly seriously.
Oh, I bet. And then, so you go from West Wing, part of bouncing around, but so many great things, Rob. Oh, really quickly, superficially, I'm dying to ask you, when you saw Austin, the original Austin Powers, and you heard they were doing like a, when you saw Robert Wagner, had you done a Robert Wagner impression prior to that?
So what happened was Mike and I became best friends after Wayne's World. So very much in each other's lives. And when Mike was debating doing Austin Powers, he created the character and did it for a week at the Groundlings. I'd give notes and we would talk, and it was unclear really what it was going to be or not be. And then he wrote the script, and the script was great. And I loved that. And I had a bit part in it just for fun that got cut, that's in the extended version, which is it's a really fun, really fun sequence. I won't, it's very elaborate setup to describe it. I won't bore
them. I'll see it. Yeah. It's in the deleted stuff.
Yeah. But so, and then Robert Wagner obviously is in it, and I'd known RJ for years because Melissa Gilbert and Katie Wagner, his daughter, were best friends. So I, on any given Friday, I was at RJ's house drinking vodka with RJ.
Oh my God.
And so I had done an RJ impression for years and years and years. And I'll never forget, I remember what we were golfing up here at Sandpiper, Mike and I, and we were talking about Austin Powers, and I was talking about RJ, and I did my impersonation for Mike, and he loved it. So he called his then wife and said, you have to hear this. And they laughed, and it was all a big kerfuffle, and I didn't think anything of it. And then 6 months later, the script of Austin Powers 2 was sent to me by Mike, and he had written me into it.
That's cool.
Robert Wagner. And that's how.
Had you ever done that impression for Robert Wagner?
Never. And I was scared to.
I bet. I do impressions of people that I really admire. And Matt was somebody I watched, you know. Yeah, man, I did. I'm sure you do.
Oh,
do you
good.
Do a? Hey, man. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks.
Well, that's really good.
Thanks. But we were doing a movie together, and one of the makeup ladies was like, oh, Matt, have you heard Justin's impression of you?
What are you talking about, man?
I mean, it got a little weird. I'll tell you the longer story next time I see. But yeah, I did it. Yeah, I've been called out by him, and I love him. But he was like, "Hey, man, enough! All right, enough with the impression." Yeah,
so good. But yeah. You know what I love about your impression you just did is it's him, but there's something, there's an essence that you got. You know what I mean? Like, there's a channeling sort of aspect to it.
A lot of this. Yeah. Hey, man.
Yeah.
It's a lot of like stretching of these pendants.
Yes. Yeah, it's very tactile.
You know where that all started? That started with Francis feeding Matt Brando movies day in and day out.
Oh, interesting.
So think about it. How is I wish we were doing TV, but this chin thing is
Rob sticking his chin out. Yeah,
nothing more than Brando.
Oh my God! Oh my God!
I floated down that river once as a young man. It smelled as gardenias.
Oh my God, that's really good. Yeah,
that's where it is.
That's interesting. I had heard that because he, you know, Francis. He got plucked from obscure. You know, he was. Yep. Oh my God! And then he's. Wow. Did you ever get into, I know he sort of, he fetishized that actor studio world and got deep into that. Did that happen? Did you?
That's a very New York thing, you know, Matt's, you know, very New York, and I was LA, and I don't even think the actor studio had an LA presence until years later.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do-do-do-do-shaboo. Hello, hello again, shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
What do you miss most about Parks and Rec? People love that show, I'm sure. People come up to you all the time. It seems like, let me ask you a more general question. Remember Michael J. Fox saying something like this, when people would approach him, just strangers would approach him about the movies, there was something more timid about the nature of their approach versus TV. When you started doing TV, did you find people were more familiar with you and treated you such?
It's funny because I remember Michael and I were rivals for a moment, a brief moment in time.
Uh-huh.
He didn't like me very much. And and I remember going to, I want to say the Hagler-Hearns fight.
Oh, the fight, yeah.
And you know how they always introduce the celebrities? And with us tonight is, you know, whoever. And so Michael's sitting in front of me. I've not met him.
Uh-huh.
And he's sitting in front of me, and they introduce him, and he waves. And then they introduce me. And then he whips around, and he's like, oh, so there you are, Mr. Brat Pack. I guess my my invitation got lost in the mail. That's okay, because I got my own thing going, the snack pack. Anyway, so we hit it off, and we were friends ever since.
Oh, good. Okay, wait. So he was being cheeky. I thought, like...
He's the best. And so I remember one of the first times we were hanging out, you know, he was, I think Back to the Future had not even really come out yet. And he was Alex P. Keaton of Family Ties. And we pulled up in a car together, and the group of girls or whatever looked at us, and Mike Fox said, look the way they relate to me versus the way they relate to you. Cause he says, I'm in the TV, I'm in their living room. You're up on the big screen. And Michael Fox told me that same story. And that, and I think that he's absolutely right. There's a notion of familiarity, of intimacy that you get in people's homes.
Yeah. And then a larger than life quality in the movies. And also back then, as you mentioned, the teen idol phenomenon was in full effect. And so these girls deified you in a way. I mean, they were literally like, you were part of their iconography. They were putting you on their wall. And I would say you're surprisingly down to earth, only in the sense that you, for so long, were inundated with adulation and adoration. So that must take a toll psychologically.
That's nice of you to say. And I mean, I think you don't survive very long in this business without perspective.
Yeah.
And you gotta take it for what it's worth. And you know what we do, I actually think, is more important now than it's ever been, to give people comfort and remind each other of our shared humanity and escape from daily life. But we're also playing dress up for a living.
Let's
be clear. And
so
I think the people that have a really good perspective on it are the people who at the end of the day can survive it.
Was there a turning point in your career when you had to adopt it because of the result of, let's say, not working as much or just moving from teen idol, a different phase that was not, maybe you weren't as popular or whatever. Do you remember moments where you really had to take stock of where you were psychologically?
Oh God, yeah. I spent the 80s building my career.
Yeah.
90s building my development, which, you know, there's that saying, and I believe it's true, that however old you are when you become famous is where you are stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So if you become famous at 15, you're a 15-year-old for the rest of your life, unless you do serious work on yourself.
Mm.
I think there's a lot to that. And so for me, I was trapped like in I was like Han Solo in Carbonite. at probably an 18-year-old Rat Packer.
Yeah.
And you get into your mid-20s, and if you get a glimmer of awareness and realize that's what you are, you know, you're at that fork in the road where you can go, okay, I can be that guy, or I can grow and have different interests and be more well-rounded and actually have a family. And
when I'm sure I was going to say meeting your wife was probably a huge,
Sure.
These are going to be lightning round, quick questions. Yeah. What is your most commonly used emoji, would you say?
Oh, I'm the stupid original yellow colored thumbs up.
Great.
I'm just stupid and easy and just want it off my desk.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. I like that. It's user friendly. Yeah. If you could be a professional athlete, what sport would you play? You mentioned baseball, or Chad played baseball.
Whew, well,
surfing?
Baseball is my favorite. And then, I don't know, because I'm obsessed with surfing, and I would love to be a big wave surfer. I would have loved to have done that. I'm obsessed with golf.
Mm.
But then you go, well, can I also make money and not kill myself?
Yeah. Like, what would you do? Yeah, exactly. That should be part of it, I guess.
Well, if it's just pure ability,
yeah,
and like being able to do something, I would love to be, a professional golfer or a professional surfer.
Are you and Chad, you said you're close to, was there ever a moment, I have two brothers, both of whom were actors at one point, did was there ever weirdness between you guys in terms of like, oh shit, I wanted that part, or, you know,
the only weirdness was really when I was, and I think it was more sibling rivalry than anything, is I started getting famous at 18, you know, Chad was, you know, 4 years, and he and Charlie used to roll their eyes at Emilio and I.
Oh, really?
Weird. Like, those Hollywood guys.
Oh, really?
We're going to Mickey Owen's baseball camp in Missouri. So they're eating their sushi and doing their show business. And the next thing you know, they're both actors.
Yeah, that's funny. Were you up for Young Guns? Were you like, you fuckers?
No, I don't know where my offer for Young Guns was.
Yeah.
One of those things like, what the living fuck?
Yeah.
What's going on? Yeah. Babe, do you think Emilio blackballed me? Without me knowing.
Probably.
I think he might have.
That's, well, we should, if not, we should get that rumor going. Some controversial Brat Pack rumor. If you could have one snack food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh.
By the way, I love your reaction to that. I wish people could see that reaction.
I have so many.
Yeah, okay. I could tell. You just like deflated. Like, this is going to be too hard.
It's too hard.
Yeah.
I mean, the hill that I die on in terms of health and eating well is ice cream above all, without a doubt. That's my kryptonite. There was a moment during this COVID thing where I became aware that I was in my third trimester with an ice cream baby. and so I was going to have a big gender reveal for it.
You're not supposed to do that anymore, by the way.
Oh, you can't even do that anymore.
Yeah.
That's up to them to decide.
Yes.
But I was going to have a naming party, but I was going to name my baby Haagen-Dazs.
Makes sense. That's sweet. Yeah. That's also gross.
It's gross.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm also a little lactose intolerant, so it conjures images of pushing out gas, the kind of gas where you're like unscrewing a radiator and it's like. I remember that feeling after like a date, you know, when you like are just sitting on whatever indigestion you're working through, and it's like then you, when you leave, whenever you leave the house or whatever, it's like you're alone in a car.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. You can feel yourself like your body like changing. The next question I often get shamed for, and nobody shamed me worse than Alec when I asked him. You can imagine. It's what's your favorite movie of all time if you have one. Are you
what's
kidding?
Wrong with you?
Yeah. Yeah, he was coughing a lot. It was
get the fucking man a lozenge.
Yes. Yes.
Would it be so hard for Alec Baldwin to get a lozenge?
I know. It was also pre-COVID, so I wasn't as like squirrely about it.
Yeah, no, exactly. He's like, yeah, it would be something with Marty, I think.
Yes.
By the way, and for me, it is with Marty. It's good. It's good fellas.
You and Jonah Hill. If you had to live somewhere else, if you had to live somewhere else, do you live in Malibu now?
I live in Montecito, which is Santa Barbara.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Where else would you live if you could pick another place?
Here's the good news. I know this is the best place in the planet. This is it. But I have here's my fantasy. Hudson River Valley.
Oh.
Rolling estate down to the Hudson River Valley.
The best.
I got a part of me that could be on the Intercoastal Waterway in Key Largo.
Boat.
I could do that. I got a part of me that could live on a 1780 farmhouse on the outskirts of Nashville. I got a little bit of that fun.
Great.
Maybe horse country of Virginia. I definitely have some.
Oh, I'm on board with all of those fantasies, living fantasies. So good. If you could have dinner with three people, dead or alive, whom you've never met, who would they be?
JFK.
Uh-huh.
He's the first one. Three people. That's always such a hard one. It's why I never did the damn Proust questionnaire in Vanity Fair, because it was hard to answer all that stuff.
Don't they give you time for that?
They do.
But you also. But sometimes the more time you have, then you start second guessing and wanting to sound. But I know this is a tough one. It's a tough lightning round one.
I'm gonna go. It's really hard because people like I'm a huge Paul Newman fan. I knew him a little bit.
Wow.
He wasn't. And I don't mean this in a bad way, but he's not overly personable.
Well, that's the thing. It's this is operating under the assumption that Abraham Lincoln or Thurgood Marshall are going to be great dinner conversationalists and not. Whereas a good example of that, how that's not often the case. I did have dinner with Coppola. He produced this movie I was doing, and I was trying to just every chance I got, I was bringing up movies, and it's the last thing he wanted to talk about. He just wanted to talk about wine and pasta,
Yeah, he hasn't changed.
Yeah.
It's just going to be me and JFK at the Apple Pan on a stool.
Okay. All right. We're getting the cheeseburger.
Yeah.
Okay. Who's your favorite Muppet?
Oh, 100% Kermit, dude. When Kermit sings the Rainbow Connection, it's all over.
Yeah.
It's all over. It's done.
That's true. If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
To fly, of course.
Yep. Okay, also correct. If you could be one age for the rest of your life, physically speaking, what would you pick?
I would be happy to be exactly as I am now. For me, it's anywhere from...
It's not really fair to ask you that question.
I think 47 was a really good year in terms of the balance of mental, physical, spiritual, career.
That's great to know.
Honestly, I would... Now would be great too. I definitely don't want to go back to Teen Idol or Brat Pack. I don't want to do that. Sure, I don't.
Yeah. If you could be reincarnated as a non-human animal, what would it be? What animal do you identify with?
Yeah, dolphin.
Okay.
Sure.
That was funny. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Fuck all the time.
Right. Not always.
They're chattery. Yes. They like sex.
Very smooth.
They're smooth and they know how to surf waves.
Yeah.
What else do you want?
People like touching them.
They make you happy. Seeing a dolphin is releases something in your body, hearing a baby laugh.
It's
really
true. That's a good point. That's true. Yeah, true. You get they make you giddy.
Yes.
Yes. Would you rather be, again, not fair to ask you this, but would you rather be called unattractive or unfunny?
Ooh. Oh, I'd rather definitely be called unattractive.
Yeah.
Unfunny would be the lowest form of misery.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if it's somebody if it's Larry David or somebody killer. Oh God, I'm just picturing that now. Literally that. Which Golden Girl do you most identify with? Dorothy, Blanche, Rose, or Sophia? Dorothy was B. Arthur. Blanche.
Dorothy. B. Arthur. I'm a big B. Arthur person. I use Maud and B. Arthur as a touchstone all the time.
Mm. Would that be one of your favorite, Harold and Maude? I just saw it for the first time recently.
Harold Maude is great. Harold Maude, my son just watched it. It's great.
Yeah.
I'm a big B. Arthur person.
Do your sons go back and watch your stuff? Do they, have they seen all your stuff?
My youngest one, John Owen, has never seen a frame of The West Wing.
What?
Nope.
Oh my God.
He does it just to get the goat.
I have a theory, and I encountered this twice now on the show, that it was, see what you think of this. It was during a time in your career when they were young, they were like, and that show brought you away from them, took you away from them. So maybe subconsciously they're like, fuck that show. That was responsible for Dad not always, you know.
Totally. I think that's really true. I have Chris Pratt on the first episode of my podcast, and he's married to Katherine Schwarzenegger.
Oh, right.
And Katherine Schwarzenegger is my goddaughter.
Oh, my God.
And
daughter.
And goddaughter, yeah. And she's very funny about, she's never seen like True Lies.
Weird.
I'm like, wait, what?
Well, I'm sure she's seen some of the, I'm sure she's seen Terminator, Predator, this, the other one.
How have you not seen every movie that Arnold Schwarzenegger's been in?
Well, maybe similar. Maybe that was during, I don't know.
But it is that
formative
thing.
Years.
I get it. It's not a part of their entertainment sphere. It's the part of their family sphere.
Exactly.
And so they're not, you know, whatever.
And maybe responsible too. The other weirdness, Julie Bowen mentioned this, was that when people would come up, would kind of bother you guys when you were out. I'm sure it happens to you all the time. When people approach you and want pictures now, because everyone's got cameras. I'm sure it's like, oh, the West Wing is also kind of responsible for that.
Yeah, screw that show.
Yeah, fuck the West Wing. But he should watch it. Because isn't he a filmmaker, or he works
in this? He's a writer on 911 Lone Star.
Oh, cool. Okay, well, just for that alone, he should watch it. The Beatles or the Rolling Stones do you prefer?
I have the same exact question I ask people.
Oh, yeah?
I do.
I like it.
It's 100% the Beatles.
Yes, mine is too. Yeah, but I like when people qualify that for whatever reason. Oh, interesting.
There is a qualification to it, like that the Rolling Stones are the world's greatest rock and roll band, and I never saw the Beatles live. I've seen Paul live a bunch.
Yeah.
And I'm a little bit, but there's no one like, when the Rolling Stones are on stage, you're like, holy fuck, yeah. That's Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
And there's no one like that.
Yeah.
No, nobody comes close. On the other side of it, though, it's pound for pound, musical legacy, you know,
right.
Songwriting. You're not going to ever top Lennon and McCartney as songwriters. It's just not going to happen.
I think a more difficult question is, for me, is either Bob Dylan or the Beatles, or Bruce Springsteen and the Beatles. That would be more challenging.
Bruce is my guy. So, I mean, my people ask me, what's your proudest thing you've ever done? I say, my set list when I hosted E Street Radio.
Oh, cool. That's cool. I'm serious? That's cool. That's fun. That's awesome. You also have a similar genetic makeup in the sense that you're still, there's this vitality that you both have. I mean, I saw him on stage, it's now 10 years ago, but he was, I think, into his 60s at the time, maybe late 50s. And he did over 3 hours, and it was like, the sweat, and it was tiring just watching him.
Yeah, he's been a real inspiration to me on a lot of levels. I don't know him well, but I've known him peripherally for many, many, many years, and I've taken a lot of cues.
Yeah. Do you know him well enough to ask him to do the podcast?
I've already asked him.
Oh, okay.
Me yet.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, and I want to listen to that one and hear your. I'm sure you do an impression of him.
Yeah, it's mostly like this. It's a lot of laughing.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah, he seems like a joyous person. As do you. I'm so glad we got to really do this. Like, this was a thrill for me. So thank you.
Me too. This is great. I feel like our shows are simpatico. Really.
I'm excited to hear yours. It launched today.
It's every Thursday.
Great. Literally. Every Thursday. Why'd you call it that? What made you decide to call it that?
That's my Parks and Rec catchphrase.
Okay. So people say that to you often when they come up to you.
Yeah. I've never had a catchphrase. It's been however many years of being in the business. And the fact that I got one on Parks and Rec made me laugh. And also, it is literally a podcast.
Yeah. Oh, so you say literally.
Well, that's the thing, is I say it so stupidly.
Okay. All right. Did that just become? I always wonder how catchphrases work. Like, did I do that? We talk about a lot. Did that happen organically? I mean, it was literally was just something you said on the show, and then they were like, oh.
It's apparently, according to Mike Schur, he noticed that I overused the word a lot.
Oh.
and that I really leaned in on it whenever I said it, and that I did that not exactly correct pronunciation.
Oh. But you would do the correct usage. See, that's what bothers me.
Well, and also not that either. But here's one of my favorite things I'm most proud of is Chris Traeger, my character's use of literally was so specific and not correct that the dictionary amended the definition of literally because of that.
That's influence.
That's influence.
That's
like, tough job. It ain't bragging if you've done it.
Well, you've done a lot of great stuff, and I am going to be bragging about having had this conversation with you, because I've just so enjoyed it, and I thank you.
JL, you're the man.
Rolo, YOLO. And Profile Cobalt sells itself. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're wearing a Profile shirt. That sounds familiar.
And it's on my mug as I speak.
Well, say no more. I'm buying it. And that also changes the genetic makeup of your face, right? If you were to apply this stuff.
You'll have my head on your neck.
Oh, right, okay.
5 to 10 days.
Okay. Well, I'll see you then. Thanks, buddy. Have fun with the podcast.
I will, for sure. That'd be great.
I would love that. Okay.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Rob.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled BABBEL.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply. If you run an e-commerce business, you know the amount of work it takes to produce something great.
So if you want to optimize your workflow and reduce costs, ShipStation is the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates wherever you sell online.
ShipStation's simple dashboard makes managing orders, smooth label printing, reporting, and customer service unbelievably easy.
With shipping configurations automatically applied, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online.
Plus, save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off UPS, DHL Express, and USPS rates. Over 130,000 companies have grown their e-commerce businesses with ShipStation.
ShipStation is the innovative tool that helps turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth.
Go to ShipStation.com and use code LONG to sign up for your free 60-day trial.
That's ShipStation.com, code LONG.
So that happened.
Why are you sweating?
You're sweating too. Why'd you say it like seductively?
I didn't.
That happened. Well, now you're flushed. Now you're embarrassed. You were projecting your own flusteredness.
I'm just calling it like I see it. And I, after hearing that, it felt like I was on
a date.
Not on a date. I was like observing a really nice interaction between two guys who were hitting it off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we just hit
seemed
it off.
Like, yeah. You were like flirting with him.
I was.
Am I wrong? You were straight up flirting with him.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
You were like giddy around him.
I was giddy. Yeah, yeah. I re-listened to the part where I'm just very charmed by him. Yeah,
I could tell.
What do you mean flirting though? How was?
Well, you had talked about how you you had talked about how you had never met him before.
For the record, I have had a Bud Light. I'm almost done with a Bud Light seltzer.
That's why you're all.
I'm a little drunk.
So you had talked about how you had never met each other,
and I was like, I would remember that.
Yeah, you're like, I'd remember that. Like, you wouldn't remember it, but I'd remember.
Well, it's true.
And he goes, he's like, yeah, but you know, I think we have a good thing going here.
Yeah.
And when he said, I think we have a good thing, I think I forgot exactly how he phrased it. I think it was, we have a good thing going on here.
Yeah, we're connecting or something.
We're
hitting it off.
I could hear your excitement in the silence.
Well, I really like him.
I know. I get it. He's very charming.
Yeah.
He's very cool.
He's cool.
And
I'd like to be friends.
And doesn't take himself too seriously.
How attractive is that?
I mean, it's such an attractive quality.
Yeah. Yeah, when somebody who looks like that, who could, I mean, let's face it, most of the people who are in that category, like a 10.
He's a 9.
I almost said a 9 or a 10, but he's, anyone calls him a 9 is out of their minds. 10s, I don't want to generalize, but for the most part, I would imagine, I mean, it makes sense that they never really have to cultivate as much of a sense of humor or a self-effacing personality. Somehow did.
Well, which, again, is why he...
Testament to his parents.
It's also why people have low expectations for him when
which
it comes to comedy. And he's taken advantage of that.
Yeah.
People probably... They look at someone like that, and they're like, oh, he's probably like a mimbo.
Yeah.
Kind of dull, and he's skated by in his looks.
Yeah.
But he's actually really funny and
really
smart.
Funny, yeah. I know. That was something I started noticing in the 90s. I think we've gotten into it too much in the interview. But I remember that being struck by that, being like my perception of him, and also throughout, you know, Sex, Lies, and Videotape. And then the scandal, that was a big scandal. Now they're, you know, so I mean, they've been like, you don't think about that anymore when you think about Rob Lowe. But as a child of the 80s, that was a huge story.
Bad boy.
What?
He was a bad boy.
Yeah. Yeah. He had that image.
Like, he's confident in himself, but he also, how do I put this? He also doesn't take his celebrity or his former teen idol status as anything more than just like a thing that happened to him.
He doesn't deny it.
He doesn't deny it, but he also doesn't like revel in it.
Yeah.
You know?
And
in fact, if anything, he reduces it to this passing, superficial thing that, you know, he was on this path at some point along with Bieber and you know,
well,
all these guys,
yeah, I think,
these teen idols, and it's fleeting.
Yeah, I think that's the only healthy way to internalize something like that, because the alternative is really actually scary, and I've seen that manifest in people too, the former teen idols who,
right,
that they're holding on,
well,
to
that's
it.
He says that was really interesting. I
see
never
with
heard
high
that
school
before.
Football stars too 10 years
yeah I never
later.
Heard that before, the idea that when someone becomes famous, they get stuck at the age where they became famous.
Uh-huh.
Unless you do real
work,
serious work on yourself. Yeah. And he did. He's like one of a number of guests we've had now who has become sober. Mm-hmm. And all those guests, I mean, the common, I know I've said this before, but the common through line is that they are all have a wisdom because they've worked on themselves in a way that other people don't have. By the way, this episode is sponsored by Bud Light Seltzer. I just want to remind you that.
It's true. It's true. But drink responsibly. Anheuser-Busch. Anheuser-Busch.
St. Louis, Missouri.
For me to say? Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri. Anyway, drink responsibly. And, you know, not to dwell on his face, how many times have we said that? But I was studying it because it's right in front of me. And it looks like the face that I remember being in high school and wanting, remember that feeling of wanting your face to look different? Like, oh, my, I don't have, I wish my jawline were more defined. There's certain things that are like the idea of male beauty being defined in culture and wanting those things. And I realized that's what it is. That his face is like the definition of, you know, like an objective marker of male beauty.
It is. But again, I feel like we shouldn't be dwelling
on
it too
because
much.
It's...
Because he's so much more than that.
And I thought it was so interesting the way he he articulated it very well, that to be reduced to that is like you lose your autonomy almost. Like you lose a sense of agency or control.
Well, you're objectified.
Yeah.
He's objectified.
Yeah.
And people, and ironically, his first movie, The Outsiders, that we just talked about, he got it in part. I know he had to go through a rigorous series of auditions, but he got it in part because he was a teen idol, and he was up on that board with all those other teen idols of the time.
Leif Garrett.
What's his name from Charles in Charge?
Oh, Scott Baio. That's right.
Willie Ames.
Well, see, now, I wonder if Scott Baio... I just wonder when it comes to... being healthy, having a healthy perspective of teen idleness, I wonder how those, I'd be curious to talk to them and to know, because I don't want to mention names, but I've met people who are still holding on to it, you know.
I'm sure it's really very difficult not to hold on to it. Like you said, the star quarterback of the football team who wins the state championship, very, very often that guy becomes a 40-year-old guy who's still talking about
the championship
that night.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's very common, but Rob Lowe has clearly done a lot of work on himself. And another impressive thing about him, I want to listen to his podcast because he is a very good storyteller, and I imagine his podcast is full of those stories.
But wasn't that
you asked about the difference between the TV star and the movie star, like the difference, and he had a perfect story about Michael J. Fox that answered the question. And I think people, Alec Baldwin's good at this too. People who use stories to make their points. And I know we talked about this with Alec Baldwin, but it's such an impressive quality to me that they kind of slip in seamlessly stories in order to make
further
a point. In order to further the conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not just like, it's my turn to tell a story.
Yeah, yeah.
It furthers things.
Or to advance a point that you made, to amplify your own
Exactly.
point.
And in this case, he did that.
He did that. I know, I sometimes find myself, which is scary, I don't want to turn into this person, but I find myself telling stories because I've been reminded of something, and something, there's some word has triggered a memory that I think might be entertaining. I mean, everyone kind of does that, but I think some people just do it much better than others. And like you said, to advance the conversation and not in a selfish way to like hold court and tell a fun story.
Yeah.
I sometimes fear that I do the latter.
He just seems like he has a real zest for life. And when you asked him where he'd want to live, if not for where he lives now, he wanted to live in so many different places.
Yeah,
and I thought that was, that really told me something about him. You know, he wants it all.
Yeah.
I want to live in Nashville. I want to live in New York. I want to live in California. He really has like a zest.
And there's
enthusiasm for life.
And there's a youthful quality to that way of thinking and being. And I wonder how much that has to do with, not to get back to his looks, but like just in terms of his, forget how his face is set up. It's just he looks so young. He looks so youthful.
I love his dinner of gorgeous guys. It's him and JFK and Paul Newman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what a gorgeous dude.
Why would he want that kind of competition?
Well, because he doesn't care about that stuff.
That's true.
He's secure.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be.
No.
I'm imagining myself having Rob Lowe's face, and I wouldn't want Paul Newman around.
I know. I would want, like, Amelia Earhart. I really would. I think Amelia Earhart would be at my... That's a hard one for me.
What would you talk to her about?
Oh, what are you kidding? Nicomora? Like, what happened to her?
That's it?
Well, and her adventures and her travels and like what it was like.
You would bring up at a dinner party with someone you had never met, you would bring up how she died? That's so rude.
Well, I'm sure I don't think it'd be rude to do that with a dead person. If like let's say there's an afterlife and you get to actually have those discussions with people. Like I'm sure people want to talk about that stuff.
You have to at least ease into it though.
Of course. I wouldn't open with that. Hey, Amelia. So nice to meet you. What is it? Which island did you crash on? And like, how long did you live? Of course, you can't do that. I would be the one. I'd go out of my way though to bring up the South Pacific, and I wouldn't order the crab because you know.
She got eaten by crabs.
Yeah, apparently,
he's a dolphin. He said he wants to be reincarnated as a dolphin.
I can see that.
Who's more of a dolphin than him?
Yeah.
How easy is it? Makes perfect sense.
Yes. Smooth. He's very smooth.
When you didn't know that literally was his catchphrase on Parks and Rec,
right.
And you were like, oh, yeah, yeah, But you like couldn't commit to saying,
I didn't want to lie.
I didn't know that.
I know.
But you also couldn't commit to lying and saying, oh, of course, Parks and Rec.
Yeah, so it's just in between. You were
like,
just
in between. You're like, oh.
You know, Rockwell does, Sam does that a lot.
Yeah. Oh.
When he doesn't know something, but he doesn't want to be offensive. Yeah. Oh yeah. I didn't know that. I should watch more Parks and Rec because people I really
I like Parks and Rec.
Yeah, like you know, people whose sense of humor I respect really like it.
One little clarification: you said he said Bea Arthur, he loved her in Maude, and you confused that with Harold and Maude, and those are two different things.
Oh, I did.
Maude is a
the spinoff
is a show. It was a sitcom in the 70s. That Bea Arthur starred in.
Oh.
And Harold and Maude is a movie.
No, I know. We were just talking about that.
It's a different kind of Maude. And I think he knew that and he didn't want to correct you because he's charming and cool.
Oh,
and he didn't
make really?
I don't have that same problem.
I didn't know I did that.
Yeah.
Oh, you had any opportunity to shame or challenge. No, he's too... he doesn't care enough about being right. That's another charming thing. When you don't care that much about being right. I also need some more of that.
Let's read a letter.
You know, I also didn't bring up Chadlow. Chadlow is
a
big...
You brought him up.
I did?
Yeah.
No, but not about Life Goes On, did
no.
I? No. Oh, yeah.
I love Life Goes On.
You don't both have to not have... You don't both have to have grown up with watching Life Goes On. Yeah, that was a big show for us. And so he was like omnipresent.
I think I was in a way more aware of Chadlow for a while than Rob Lowe because
for sure.
of that show.
See, Rob Lowe to me, again, not to, to get back to the... scandal, but he was synonymous more with that. I remember thinking about Rob Lowe because I was too young to watch.
Yeah, I was. I kind of missed the Brat Pack. I mean, I saw a lot of those movies.
We just
obviously,
missed it,
but I wasn't. I was too young when they were.
We
hot.
Didn't exactly. Yeah, I was really into Emilio Estevez. That was like I thought
Young Guns.
Yeah, from Young Guns.
Yeah, me too.
That was like a formative movie for me. But then I went to see. I saw Men at Work in the theaters. With Emilio Estevez and Charlie Sheen.
I
was really into... I thought he was the coolest Emilio Estevez. And that's the reason I watched The Outsiders for the first time.
He is cool.
He's cool. And similar vibe to Rob. I had a lunch with him once. Very easy to talk to. Funny.
Cool.
So, the Brat Pack. They're cool. The ones I've met.
It's hard to get cooler than that.
Yeah, I know.
I guess the Rat Pack is cool, too.
Yeah, for that generation. But for us, for our...
See, you know, this is going to be controversial, but I think the Brat Pack seems cooler than the Rat Pack.
Yeah, because it was a time
You know how I feel about Sinatra.
Yeah, you think he's overrated. Refly me to the ding-dong, delete ding-dong. It's just kind of like this, and hey...
Let me put it this way.
He's a good actor.
Frank Sinatra is no Ben Platt.
I agree with that. And probably had a much different perspective on the world.
Yes. And different opinions.
Yes. Hey, here we go with a letter. Ring a ding ding ding. And Dean Martin with a drink all the time.
I like Sammy Davis.
Sammy Davis is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah, he's incredibly funny and great singer. I mean, he did it all.
Yeah.
I do like Sammy. But I think Dean Martin was just kind of like, hey,
I think
everyone.
He was along for the ride. I think Dean Martin is like...
like leathery and like,
yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay, let's...
We get some angry Dean Martin mail.
Yeah, come at me, Dean Martin fans. And also, in Dean Martin fans' defense, I don't know enough about
him. I don't either. He just seems like a hanger-on to me.
You know, but Don Rickles... Wasn't Don Rickles part of the Rat Pack?
No,
he was like their jester.
Them, yeah.
He was like their court... I feel like they were maybe condescending to him, and he to me, is...
He's better than all of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Let's read a letter.
Okay. This is a letter from Julie Wilson. Greetings from Indiana. Genslinger, she says, and Christian. You know, a lot of people call me... reference that on Instagram, I notice, when they write things to me. Hey, Genslinger.
You really made an impact on that show.
Yeah. There's something that's a little condescending about it, though.
But it's also a funny name.
It is a funny name, yeah. Genslinger. Big fan of the show and bigger fan of the Christian-Justin dynamic. Oh, thanks, Julie. I grew up with three sarcastic and witty sisters as the youngest, so I appreciate a lively and fun sibling relationship. I can say I listen to another podcast of similar design that is very popular, and I typically listen to the interview and skip the host chat at the end because I just don't find it to be engaging and interesting. Oh, that's nice. And
now
it's nice
I'm so curious who she's talking about.
I don't want to
Don't guess.
Yeah, no, because that'd be insulting. But it's nice of her to not have mentioned that, because it would have been like a snark. And she says she likes the podcast. Yeah. She listens to it. With your podcast, I find myself anxiously waiting for the discussions between Justin and Christian at the end. That's really nice. Sometimes I hear little comments during the interview that I know or hope to have a little commentary from Christian. Now, can we talk about that sweet drop of sunshine, Maggie? Ah, have you read this letter?
No.
We've only had a small glimpse of her on the show. Oh, she's going to love this. But she is so positive and bubbly. Bubbly.
She can be bubbly, yeah.
You've seen when she's gone a little flat.
Yeah.
She's not as carbonated.
Well, no one's always bubbly.
Yeah, no, of course.
But bubbly again, it's like the ditzy thing.
Speaking of, look what I'm reaching for.
I'm assuming Julie doesn't equate bubbly with ditzy.
Right. Well, we were just talking about that. Yeah. We're in the beanie episode.
Yeah.
Or maybe she does. I just find it infectious. That's really nice. Maggie, I like that. I would love to hear her on the show every now and again.
She's going to love this.
She will. And, you know, we try to – Maggie's been in the voice memo. So if you listen – Julie, if you listen to after the credits at the end, we include a voice memo. And maybe we'll include her in this one. Okay. So and back to Julie. Good job, Christian.
I'm not responsible for her personality, but thank you.
Also, I hope we never have a definitive answer about the Christian Derek Jeter debacle, because I love Christian's reaction to fans writing in with their opinion or facts, in quotes, about Derek Jeter's athletic abilities. It's always good for a laugh. Well, it seems like so long ago that debacle was raging. All in all, you both seem like such fun, smart, and driven people. Driven. Well,
like part-time superheroes.
Yeah. Well, that's nice of you to say. Thanks for taking the time to share a little of your personalities with all of us. P.S. I'm happy the pronunciation of LaCroix. Oh, now I'm doing it wrong. LaCroix. Was worked out because that was a real doozy for me.
Uh-oh. Maybe she's on the LaCroix team. I think it's LaCroix.
It's supposed to be LaCroix.
I think so.
I bet she's on the LaCroix team because we had hemmed and hawed too much about it. She was probably like...
hemmed and hawed.
Would you rather be I just love that people are including these. Would you rather be loved by someone you don't love, or love someone who doesn't love you back? Wow. That is intense. Would you rather be loved by someone you don't love? I mean, it's about whether or not you want to feel pain or to inflict pain.
Right, but
inflicting
this,
pain is painful for me.
Does it mean would you rather be in a relationship like this or just have this person exist in the world?
I've had both happen to me, and they're both very
because if
difficult.
You're not in a relationship and it's just someone out there who loves you and you don't love them back, I would prefer that.
Yeah,
because it's selfishly a lot easier to cope. But if the question is,
I would imagine it's in a relationship.
If you're in a relationship,
but then you get out of it either way.
Oof,
you have to.
I mean, both. I think they're equally terrible. But I guess I would rather. Be loved, and not love back. If I had to pick.
In a relationship. It's tough, though, but it's either way. I would, too. It's horrible, though. I mean, that's selfish, I know. But I would rather that, I suppose. That's really hard. Yeah, thanks, Julie. yeah, that's tough. Should we do another Would You Rather from
There's
someone?
There's another one.
Oh, great. Oh, there is. Would you rather...
one that's less mournful?
Yeah, and deep. I don't want to get too deep. Would you rather lose the ability to read or lose the ability to speak? Oof. Hmm. Yeah. Read or speak?
Well, you know, the problem with losing the reading is you read a lot to get by in life.
That's
just
true.
Like traffic signs. That's true. And
traveling would be almost
traveling
impossible.
It'd be tough.
You'd have to be told. You'd have to go with guides, I guess, if you were to travel anywhere. But speak.
Or just recognize.
Even think about speech. How often? I mean,
I would. I would
rather lose the ability to read.
Me too. I'm also not a big enough reader
to
that wouldn't impact my life as much as other people, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't read, like, 3 books a year.
Yeah.
but speaking, I mean, that's all, I value that.
Yeah, I would.
Too much. Yeah. Sincerely, Julie. Well, thank you, Julie. Those were heady and fun.
So thank you, Julie. And thank you for the nice things you said about us and about Maggie. I know she'll appreciate it. And I...
Positive and bubbly.
I second your opinion.
Yeah. So you think she can always be... She's always positive and bubbly.
Yes. Always.
All right. Well, so thanks to Julie. And to who sounds charming in her own right. And speaking of charming, the one and only Rob Lowe, one of the best Lowe's, the highest of the Lowe's.
Everyone go listen to his new podcast. He has great guests, called Literally.
You know what I want to know more about? His days, the 80s, tearing it up in the 80s with fucking Judd Nelson and Michael J. Fox.
I'm sure you'll get a really good window into it.
Yeah.
And if you want to write in, we love hearing from you guys, and we love letters and would you rathers, obviously. Our email address is lifeisshort@wondery.com.
So thank you to everyone writing in and listening and now subscribing to Rob Lowe's podcast.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long. It is co-hosted and produced by you,
Christian Long,
as well as
Megan Monaco.
Senior producer is
Michelle
Mish.
Lanz.
Audio engineer is
Sergio Enriquez.
Executive producers are Marshall.
Executive producers are
Marshall Louis
and
Hernan Lopez
for Wondery. Bye.
Stay gold.
Pony boy.
Oh, you have seen it.
I know the line.
Oh, okay.
Bud Light Seltzer. What flavor are you having?
Lemon lime.
Two lemon limes. Here we go.
Ooh. Mmm. So good.
Yeah. Why are you laughing?
I don't know. Because it's fun. Having fun. Let's leave me alone.
Oh, sorry.
What are your impressions?
What's your favorite flavor?
This one's really good, but I think that black
cherry
is my favorite.
Yeah.
Here's the most important thing. Do you know what I'm going to say?
I know.
Do you know, Margaret?
Responsible.
What?
Drinking responsibly.
Kind of close.
What are you doing right now?
Sipping.
Yeah, but how's it making you feel?
Good.
So are you...
What are you doing that responsibly?
Drinking responsibly.
No, you're...
Enjoying responsibly.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.